The anti-war movement in Columbus, Ohio is rooted in local activism, and in that town, many of the local activists are from the Native American community. Barry Nanderos Thomas is a member of the American Indian Movement, AIM, a youth counselor, and a Gulf War veteran. He spoke at the Ohio rally about what it means to go to war.
I also want to start out by welcoming you in my own language. Sio, yona ustilawa. Ani anu yunwiya. Ani jalagi tohidu. I always like to do that as we're standing here at the State House that's built on the graves of our ancestors. The State House, which only a few years ago tried to pass an English-only legislation. And as I talked to some of these legislators and asked them why they would try to do something like that, they said, well, we just want people to speak American. Just to let you know, I just did. As my uncle, Wabuninini, said a few moments ago, yes, we want to fight terrorism. We're very familiar with it. We've been dealing with it for 510 years. We want to talk about biological weapons. We know that. Talk about General Amherst and smallpox blankets. We want to talk about cultural genocide. We understand that. Just look at Wounded Knee. Over 300 Lakota people were killed for practicing their religion. Not much different than what happened at Deir Yassin to the Palestinian people under the guidance of Sharon. We understand what it's like to be oppressed by the mainstream. We understand what it's like to have our voices silenced, to be taken away from our mothers and fathers and our families when we're only small, like my little one here, taken to boarding schools, have our hair cut off, put in military uniforms, and denied our culture, denied our language, the true meaning of family and culture. We understand what the Palestinians are going through. When we see what goes on there, what I have seen with my own eyes, I can tell you, they have learned from here. The Palestinian encampments are no different than our reservations. They give them a different name, but their meaning is just the same. It is there to imprison, to make powerless the Palestinian people. President Bush and many of his others who are clamoring for this war, they don't know what it is. These war hawks, really I should say chicken hawks, ask them where they were when it was their time. Vice President Cheney, at that time, and in his own words, had other priorities. Newt Gingrich was in grad school. President Bush had his father take care of that little problem of the draft. Rush Limbaugh, who's a voice on one of these talk radio stations, at the time he was a DJ for a disco radio station instead of going and serving, but now he's one of the loudest voices. And that's exactly why I call them chicken hawks. What the media doesn't show you is the real price. What it doesn't show you is the human face. Whenever we see Palestinians or Arabs from the Middle East on camera, on CNN, or the network news, they're always portrayed as burning American flags. They're always portrayed as terrorists. What we don't see is the Palestinian mother trying to guard her children from Israeli tanks as they bulldoze over their homes. What we don't see is the rubber bullets that are used by the Israeli soldiers to quell demonstrations by young people who have a collection of bullets that they pulled out of their own bodies, filling mason jars. What we don't see and we don't hear about is the over $750,000 going from this country to Israel to buy arms and to buy tanks and to buy bullets to oppress the Palestinian people. They want to go back into Iraq and quote-unquote finish unfinished business. But one thing you haven't heard from anyone in the administration, including Colin Powell, is the price that we've already paid. Myself, as well as over 250,000 other Gulf War veterans, are still suffering from the last time the senior Bush sent us there. We're bleeding internally. We're going blind. We're losing limbs. Skin is falling off of our flesh. A thing called the Gulf War syndrome. A thing that the Pentagon claims doesn't exist. A thing that the Pentagon says, well, they're just a bunch of unrelated symptoms. We're not really sure what it is. The truth of the matter is it all comes down to money. The money it would take to give disability benefits to over 250,000 veterans would take away from the money that they're spending on Tomahawk missiles, on Black Hawk attack helicopters, on Apache gunships, on 7.62 millimeter rifle rounds. What they also don't show you is the human cost. When I came back, I couldn't believe what I saw. People, how they're doing now. Let's go bomb them. Let's go nuke them. Let's go kill them. Let's just take care of all of them. In the Dakota language, we have a saying, Mutakuyasin, we are all related. That's what they don't want you to see. They don't want you to see the piles of acrid, burning flesh. They don't want you to see the blocks and blocks of carpet-bombed streets that includes not only government buildings, but schools and hospitals, playgrounds, senior care centers, community centers, mosques. They don't want you to see that. They want you to make it into a Nintendo game. They want you to objectify it to where it is somehow not really happening. It's more like a video game. Because they know. That's one of the lessons they learned from the Vietnam War. They know once the people start to see, once the people start to see the true face, once the people start to see the piles of bodies, streets running in blood, the body bags coming home, that this hundreds or thousands turns into millions. That's why the senior Bush, 11 years ago, decided so quickly to stop. Less than 24 hours after CNN showed some footage, showed some real footage of the Highway 1 going north out of Kuwait City, and dozens and dozens and dozens of vehicles that were blackened, that were burning, bodies and limbs charred and crumbling to ash. Less than 24 hours after that, he stopped. He knew that the American people, once they saw the reality, once they saw the horror, once they saw the true price of this capitalist-driven war, that they would no longer back him, which he found out very quickly thereafter. I just want to close with one thing. We were here a year ago, and there are about 30 of us. There are at least 550 that marched from Goodell Park, and I know others came. So we are growing exponentially as we spread the word, as we are here in the cold, in the wind. We are the core, we are that heartbeat that are going to spread this word and spread the message to the rest of America, to the rest of that majority that has been silent, the rest of that majority that has been fearful to speak out, the rest of that majority that has been afraid to say what they truly mean, intimidated by Bush Light, who says, you're either with us or you're against us. Imitating one of those John Wayne or one of those Clint Eastwood, one of those guys on the Western. You're either with us or against us, with the unstated statement that you better not be against us because we can do things to you. But the point is, we can do things to the administration. We can vote them out. We can move. We can make them see that America does not stand behind unnecessary warfare. America does not stand behind racist and genocidal policies. America does not stand behind terrorist acts, wherever they may be. Thank you very much, Frida.
Barry Nanderos Thomas of the American Indian Movement addressing an anti-war rally November 9th in Columbus, Ohio.
I was listening to the voices of life, chanting in unison, carry on the struggle. The generations surged together in resistance to meet the reality of power. Mother Earth embraces her children and natural beauty to last beyond oppressor's brutality. One time, I was visiting with my relatives, the clouds, the mountains, the sky, the trees. My relatives touched my spirit, nudged it lovingly. Listen to us, impatient one. We are forever. You must remember the gentleness of time. You are struggling to be who you are. You say you want to learn the old ways. Struggling to learn when all you must do is remember. Remember the people. Remember sky and earth. Remember the people have always struggled to live in harmony, in peace. Struggle against selfishness and weakness so the people may live as nations. The old ways are hard. The people have always had to work together. Remember, impatient one. Remember and live. Do not be afraid of truth. Respect, discipline. Share your life so the people may live. Honor sky and earth. Honor yourself. Honor your relations. Remember, impatient one, the gentleness of time. Grandmother Moon, you are more than light in the night. You are more than the moon. You are spirit connection. Your energy is our life. You are memories to generations past. You are the creator of sensations that will always last. You are the knowledge, the teacher, the influence to keep the people sane. You are a healer for spirit pain. Grandmother Moon, we love you. And we are angry at the invaders who trash you and violate our universe with their mechanical uncleanliness. We pray for you, for us, and for the invader who just can't comprehend respect, love, or the balance of life. We do not join the invading madness. From the way they act, it speaks of spirit sadness. Machine money progress is the cause of our common abuse. We see you, Grandmother. We feel you. We love you. We know through your reality we will endure. We are one. We pray for you. We pray to you.
Each November, as Americans celebrate the Thanksgiving holiday, some Native Americans construct a prayer lodge in honor of their ancestors. Jay Winter Nightwolf, a member of the Buffalo Ridge Cherokee, and Rico Newman of the Piscataway people, visited the lodge erected at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., and spoke with Nathan and Chocana, Omaha, about war and peace.
Thinking about my brother. I have a couple brothers now. Raleigh and Norman. Raleigh was my blood brother. And Norman was a society brother. And they're both gone now. And they're both veterans. And both of them served in time of combat. Them men's very much, good men's, and we miss them lots. But, you know, my brother's name won't be on the wall because he died when he came back from Vietnam. But, you know, when the 20th anniversary of the Vietnam Memorial, you know, we had two fine color guards from Oglala Nation and Pine Ridge School. And then we had the Haskell Indian Nations University color guard here, the staff color guard, and we were very honored to be the host to the Haskell Indian Nations color guard, and we're really thankful that they made it this far and participated in our veteran celebrations here. We'd like to continue on with that veteran celebration, you know, next year, have color guards from all over Indian Nations to come here to Washington, D.C., bring their Eagle Staffs, their drums, and their dancers, and their veterans. We're hoping to build up to a nice powwow for the World War II veterans, because they're going to be having a dedication of the World War II Veterans Memorial over here, just across the street from where we're at right now. We know that there's World War II veterans, Native Americans, out there, and We hear a lot about the Navajo Code Talkers, and they did really good job. But then there's a lot of other nations, Native Americans, that were in World War II. They were World War I, too, also. But anyway, that's what that flash flute was for, is those folks.
Hi, I'm Jay Winter Night Wolf, and I'm here with my brother, Nathan. I'm down on the mall looking right at the Washington Monument, and Nathan sits here every year for the entire month of November, the Native American Heritage Month, in a teepee with his family to commemorate who we are and what we're all about. And this being November, Nathan, the month that they call the Thanksgiving month, what's your take on Thanksgiving and what it really, really is?
Well, on Thanksgiving Day, myself and my companion, we hold a fast for that day from sunrise to sunset. When I first started this fast, it was a protest. I sobered up about 18 years ago, but about 20 years ago, I was invited to this prominent man's house in Lawrence, Kansas, you know, for a Thanksgiving dinner. And when I was there, you know, he had all the fixings, all the trimmings, and it was a nice house. And so I went in there, and before I came around the corner, you know, they were talking about, yeah, this is really good Thanksgiving, and, you know, and there was even a real live Indian here, you know. And everybody was drinking, and I was drinking. But for some reason, it just didn't feel right. And the next year, I just decided, well, I'm not gonna eat anything. I'm not going anywhere. And I was just mad, you know, and angry, and so I didn't eat that time. And then after I continued with that fast out of anger, I sobered up, and then about 2 or 3 years into my sobriety, my protest turned into a fast of Thanksgiving, you know, because I was grateful for my sobriety and I was grateful for a lot of things. But then at the same time, the anger that I was feeling, it didn't go anywhere. It just turned into prayer somehow. I don't know how to explain that, you know. But so it's been a prayer fast for the last 19 years.
I know when you were there at that house where they had all the trimmings and all the other good stuff, that he said you were the only Indian. They had the real Indian, so you felt more or less like a token, right?
Definitely. It was just some good old boys sitting around the table, and they were smoking their cigars and whatnot, and har-haring, and yeah, we got a real live Indian. Mm-hmm. And then that just snapped in me.
So it was more or less a spectacle. Let me ask you something, Nathan. We know the truth about Thanksgiving, and we know that lie and those myths that they tell every year to children in school about the pilgrims coming here and landing on Plymouth Rock. What do you feel about that?
It's kind of difficult to... The 500 years that have gone on, that's passed, you know, a real hardship on Native people, indigenous people of this land. We continue to uphold our end of the treaties. A lot of people find it hard to understand our spirituality, that when we make a commitment with Creator, that's something we have to keep. It must be just something inherent. It's like alcoholism. Alcohol, they say Indians can't drink. And then if we make a commitment with Creator, and you're in a sober mind and you do that, then it's hard to go back on that. And so from the very beginning, people came here seeking refuge, help, whether they told the people here or not, that's what they came for. And the people here understood that. And after first meetings, maybe there was some conflict, but then the wiser ones of both sides got together and decided, well, there was a way to live here, coexisting. And if you make these commitments, these covenants with one another and in the presence of God, that it should be that way. And maybe we don't know it in our physical or our immediate minds, but down deep in our psyche, that's what all the nations do, you know, is to keep that commitment.
Yeah, you definitely have a point there. A lot of people in America, they look at Thanksgiving as, I gotta have this, I gotta have that, I'm gonna get me a turkey, I'm gonna get me the dressings, I'm gonna get me all that stuff. But see, that's not the true meaning of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is giving. And if you don't have anything to give or you can't give, then you can't be thankful.
That's right. When I started out with my fast, it was anger. And I was just mad at what had happened to me personally and what happened to the Indian people, the Native American people, the indigenous. But then after I received my sobriety, I started noticing things that, you know, throughout the world, you know, children are stepping on landmines. Children are dying tonight because they don't have something to eat, you know, because of economic sanctions on their countries by other countries. There are children who are suffering in war-torn countries, you know, because of political strife, economic strife, and their adults don't know how to deal with one another. They're battling over religion. The children of the world really need some help. That's kind of why I changed my fast from anger to Thanksgiving is one thing, but then I'm thankful for what I got, and so that's why I give up this medicine of food and water for one day, is so that maybe somewhere a child might be able to receive a little something if I don't take something.
That's a great way of looking at it, and that's what a lot of people need to do this year. Instead of being greedy and overstuffing themselves and falling asleep in front of the television after the dinner, they need to think of the spiritual point of it. Not the religious point, but the spiritual point, because there is a difference between religion and spirituality. It takes a lot of a person spiritually to come and sacrifice a month out of his life and bring his family and expose them to these elements. It has not been pleasant at all. It's been raining, it's been cold, but yet you and your family stay here in this teepee, and I thank you. Is there anything else that you would like to tell us?
You know, I make that fast from sunrise to sunset, and then after sunset, if there's anything left over, you know, I go around to my friends' houses. But since I've been out here on the mall, we've been here these last 4 years, and you know, people have their dinners, and I'm not trying to make any kind of guilt or anything on anybody. I'm just, this is just me, you know. After dark, if there's like a leftover turkey sandwich or something, you know, I'll eat it, you know, myself, you know, because thank you for noticing us, and, you know, but, you know, those children over there, one's five and one's three, the first year we did this, she was just turned 4 months here in the teepee, so, you know, a fourth of her first 4 months was in a teepee and got to witness the full moon cycle from the lodge here in this prayer lodge. And we had a lot of grandmothers come into this lodge from a lot of different places. And when this fire's burning, and that's how we make these prayers. A brother here from South Dakota. My companion was telling me that Edgar Bear Runner has been here at this lodge and at this fire visiting us every 4 years, and he's all the way from South Dakota.
This is my own personal morning star song, and it's a song that I call upon the morning star to look down upon me and ask the morning star to pity me and to hear me, to watch over me, and to allow me to have another good day. This time I'll share my personal with you. Oh, Just to momentarily reflect on the historical aspect of our people, what is Thanksgiving to American citizens was a day of mourning for our indigenous relations whose grandparents were massacred, whose grandparents were slaughtered. We didn't have the same meaning with the rest of Americans. Some of us traditionally never did celebrate and have Thanksgiving like the normal American family. Thanksgiving was kind of a day of mourning to us, you know, a mourning in a sense where a new kind of people came and murdered our people, and they're celebrating. And then what's there to celebrate? We don't feel right about celebrating cultural genocide. And so to us, Thanksgiving to us is every day. Thanksgiving to us is 24/7, 365, every day. You know, every day we pray to the morning star and we give thanks for giving us another day and keeping us alive culturally. And so that's our Thanksgiving, you know, every day, not just once a year.
And it's really comfortable being right here in the nation's capital on the mall in a teepee with a fire. It's the most, it's cozy and it's very highly spiritual. Shoshona is Nathan's wife, and I think she might want to say a little something about the experience here on the mall, and even a little something about Thanksgiving.
Unlike other people, Native American people here in Washington, D.C., we don't have anywhere else to go pray, not in our traditional way. If we're Christians, we can go to churches. If we're Jewish, we could go to synagogues. If we were Buddhists, we could go to the temples here. But to pray in our traditional way with this fire, with our traditional items, to pray with the tobacco, to use the cedar and the sage and the sweet grass and the, you know, the way we do, then there isn't anywhere else to go to do that. So we come out here not as a demonstration, not as a protest, not even as an exhibit, but just in practice of our way. We believe that it's important for the Native American people here, for families here, children here, to have a place to come where they can participate in these ways, you know, in these traditional ways. And so our organization, you know, we just try to provide opportunities for Native American people to participate in a variety of traditional types of events and ceremonies. Give the children a chance to experience these things and see these things.
Out
There's actually many nations here tonight. Nathan, of course, is Omaha. I'm here with my brother, Rico Newman, who's Piscataway. And Edgar over there is Oglala from Pine Ridge. I have a lot of respect and honor for those people. And I'm Buffalo Ridge Cherokee. And I want to get a few words from everybody before we wrap this up. Their thoughts on Thanksgiving. And Rico Newman.
Yeah, this Thanksgiving, as usual, during this whole month, we observe the gifts that everyone in the family has received during the year. And during that day, we pass around the feather, and everyone speaks on what they're grateful for. And we all give something back in some form or fashion during the month of November. Something that everyone has to do is give back. Those in New England and up and down the coast of the Atlantic shores of America, thanks was given when success was made in eradicating the Indian people and being able to take what was someone else's.
J. Winter Nightwolf, a member of the Buffalo Ridge Cherokee, and Rico Newman of the Piscataway people, speaking with Nathan and Chicana Omaha about war and peace at the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., where a Native American prayer lodge was erected to honor the ancestors. Peace Watch is produced by Scott Gurian, with special assistance today from Reem Kathuda of WPFW. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Aisha Morris and Marcus Tyler Brown. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at PacificaArchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm the executive producer, Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.